disability learning, how to heal every symptom, visible and invisible. It is very easy for one to look in the mirror and ask oneself directly, have I risen above every single learning disability that I have been living? That is really the topic of every single treatment on this website. However, this particular treatment will focus on the ones whereby the physical appearance of someone is recognizable as relating to a label of a learning disability. The age doesn't matter. It can be a newborn baby, or it can be an adult of any age. To human belief, they have particular mannerisms which identify this terrible label. The purpose of this recording is to help one learn exactly how to heal it, no matter what it is, no matter what the label is. The only label one needs to know is that it is those two words, learning disability. Doesn't matter what the medical profession calls it. They have a classification, if you look up learning disability, that is categorized into five different types. I have noted in a prior recording called Control that was just done on August the 16th, 2023, one day ago, that the medical profession is not a science, but an art. And the reason that is very emphatically true is because the target keeps moving. They keep discovering new things which totally debunk the prior belief. And this is because it is all a human invention. The medical profession creates a disease. They create a solution. And it just goes round and round and round, all for the purpose of generating income, profit, bilking the public of their hard-earned dollars. Mary Baker Eddy stated, as was reiterated in the prior recording just noted, that someday it may be very difficult, if not impossible, to practice Christian Science because the medical profession is so well organized. What it really means is that they have a tremendous influence on the media. And what that means is that they own the media. Yes, they own the media. Big tech owns the media. Big tech is owned by government agencies. It's all a big circle of fraud upon fraud upon fraud. As Mary Baker Eddy has stated, human existence is lie upon lie upon lie, compounded lies upon lies. However, one who is deemed to have a conviction that absolutely nothing is impossible with God and are dedicated to proving it true by following the formula, the magic formula that Mary Baker Eddy has laid out for us, but hidden, but it has been revealed. If one is willing to do that and really make a commitment, tenacious, without giving up, they can overcome any label of any kind, not just one that is called a learning disability of a child or an adult. Obviously, the earlier in age that one begins to go after the successful demonstration of debunking the lie, it is deemed to be easier. I will relate to you a live experience that I'm aware of, secondhand. In other words, I knew the people very well, and I know what happened to make this come true, to totally debunk what was considered an incurable learning disability. I was very close to this family and was involved in having some communications with a practitioner, or more than one, that was involved in the healing process. So I can verify that everything I say is absolutely true. Number one, it is very helpful if one has either grown up in an atmosphere where it was believed that nothing is impossible that is good. And if that is not the case, then one has to be convinced that a belief of material life and intelligence and matter does not work, and therefore is seeking the kind of healings that are recorded in the 100 pages of Science and Health at the end, chapter 18, entitled Fruitage. And if one needs to build up their conviction that everything is possible to God, then studying that chapter, which includes some 476 different types of ailments, or studying the Rawson book entitled Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, which includes 1,315 ailments, along with reading his bio about everything he did was one success story following another. Anyway, there are tools available on the website which will enable one to experience what I witnessed to be experienced. As noted, number one is to have the conviction that nothing is impossible to God, and that you will give everything to experience the healing. It's like the lady that gave her mite to the church. She gave everything she had. So that was much more than people that gave a much larger amount in terms of quantity, but in terms of absolute value, there was nothing greater than what she gave, because that was considered to be everything she had. And again, I repeat that I was very closely involved in this entire experience and was a liaison between the various practitioners involved and the activities that took place, whereby I could verify everything I say. Step two, one must isolate the atmosphere so that no one that knows anything about the individual or the so-called belief of the label has any access to the individual, or even knows their whereabouts, or even any name they may be using. Just so you understand how valuable this step is, there's a very well-known international financial analyst and advisor who was awarded the most successful financial manager of all of them throughout the world. He advised central banks, he advised governments, and he was by far the largest one and larger than any that exists today in terms of the amount of funds managed. He was involved in a project for a period of 20 years where he isolated himself from civilization. During that 20 years, he did not age a single day. In other words, when he came back into public life, he looked the same as he did as when he left 20 years prior. He stated this on his public website, which is very well read, and apparently he had something to prove what he says. Pictures, I presume. Mary Baker Eddy relates the experience of someone who was in an insane asylum. And she believed that the lover that left her was going to come back and see her again. And so she was in this state of consciousness where she did not age. And anyone that would guess her age would guess her to be a very young woman, when in fact she was a very mature woman, many, many years older, I believe 2 or 3 or 4 decades older than what her appearance was. So the atmosphere around one has a tremendous impact on everything about the individual. So the procedure in this case was to be totally isolated from anyone that knew anything at all about the individual, or that the individual was labeled with this supposedly incurable learning disability. And as mentioned, no one knew where the individual lived, or the family, or even the name they were using, because it was deemed necessary to change their name so that they could not be identified with any kind of a search. Step number 3, they could not speak to anyone about what they were doing, period. They had to disappear for all intents and purposes from civilization that knew anything about the individual. Number 4, they needed to have the tools available to embark on an advanced learning program. This included individuals as well as all of the necessary aids such as books, recordings, and so forth. This had to include all items that would be pursued by someone that was considered at least of average learning capability and pursuing an absolutely normal life with all the attendant facilities available. Number 5, anyone that was a tutor or teacher of any type must be monitored to assure that there was absolutely no clue that there was any discussion regarding a so-called learning disability. There could not be any thought, speech, or action that could be identified as yielding to the so-called belief. I remember one of the piano teachers who had a very unlimited thought on everything about his life, and he was really an expert pianist, entertained at one of the exclusive hotels. And he taught music as a hobby when he was not performing. And I knew him very well. And just to give you a moment of background on him, he learned how to play the piano by having a piece of paper that unfolded and it had the coloring of the keyboard, the black and white keys. And he had a board that he carried around on the train with him, and he would lay the board down, and then he would unfold the paper and lay it on the board, and that's how he learned to play the piano. No sound, only the music and the keyboard. Made out of paper. I said, you must absolutely guarantee me that you will teach this individual as if they did not have any disability whatsoever. He said, no problem. And he really meant it. He really was an unlimited thinker, and he really meant it. And I trusted him because I'd known him for a number of years. We'd had discussions about some of his wonderful ideas about lack of limitation and how to do some things. So he was the first piano teacher. And by the way, this individual taught very gifted people. People that were very well healed financially would send their children to this individual for teaching. I don't know whether I mentioned this or not, but the first practitioner that was involved, and I know I covered this in the treatment on control, but the first practitioner involved is said to keep a record of anything the medical profession says about this child. And this is when the child was not expected to live, right after it was born. And I'd made the statement in the prior recording about this, but I'll repeat it here. I said, why would you do that? That seems to be making a case on behalf of the problem. And he says, no. He says, what you will find is that they contradict themselves continuously. And then you will realize that what they say should not be regarded as truth, because truth doesn't change. So that's just to let you know that from the very beginning, this individual was deemed to not even be expected to live from the day of birth. Okay, so the second practitioner brings us to point number 6. This is all extemporaneous, so I hope I don't lose the numbers. I mean, lose track of what number I'm on. So anyway, the second practitioner said, and this was after the child had survived and gotten out of the hospital, which they were in there for an extended period after birth, and the family moved to another area, another state. So I located this other practitioner for him. And the practitioner said, the first thing you want to do is to teach the child how to read. I mean, this child was only like, I don't know, one or two years old. And I said, really? They said, yes. Because that's one of the first beliefs of having a learning disability, that they don't know how to read. Because if they know how to read, they will learn. So, that's exactly what happened. There was a tutor that was hired to teach the child how to read. And this family was very dedicated. The father was absolutely 100% dedicated, and the wife was new to Christian Science and so was probably doubtful but kept quiet about her doubts. The father was absolutely committed to bringing about the healing. And when he was in the hospital seeing the mother, they wouldn't let him actually go to see the mother or to see the child, but he would just go there. And the doctor would come down and tell him the woes. And instead of listening, he said he closed his eyes and closed his ears and just repeated the scientific statement of being while this doctor was trying to talk to him. And then when he felt like opening his eyes, he would, and then he would leave. So, the husband, father, was in a position where they had the funds to do anything they wanted in terms of hiring people and living where they wanted to. And the father was absolutely devoted to seeing this thing be a successful healing. The father had been brought up in Christian Science, but was very young. So that's what they did. They hired someone to teach the child how to read. And when they did something, it was done on a very intent basis. In other words, it wasn't like once a week and then giving assignments to the child. It's that the tutor came in every single day. And they ended up buying a set of books called the Classics, which was the normal classics, I don't know, like 50 volumes or something. You know, like Robinson Crusoe and all those kinds of things. So they taught the child, or this tutor taught the child how to read all the books. And this was starting like around 2 years old, that the tutor was starting to teach. And I don't recall how many years it was, but in, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, the child was able to read the books. Maybe 5 years. So when the child was about 5 years old, they started teaching the child piano. And they started with this one individual that I knew. And they decided to move to another location, and I found another teacher, and again, it was every day. I don't know, offhand, I think it was like, I don't know, maybe 1 or 2 hours a day. And in a matter of about 3 years, the child could play every hymn in the Christian Science hymn book that was up to and including 3 flats and 3 sharps. If anyone knows anything about music, that's pretty good. And in that period of time, it was exceptional. And just as proof of the progress, they had this big grand piano, 7'6", Yamaha, C7, and they had a recording device on there where you could record the music that was played, or you could put in pre-made tapes and it would play the music. This was before they had CDs. So it's a long time ago. Cassettes was the media that was used. So in a matter of about, I would say about 3 years, so probably 9 years old, I guess it was. I don't know. Something like that. 8 or 9 or 10. And they also did the other things. They taught the child how to swim. Parents loved water views, and they were always enjoying, you know, the water. So they wanted to make sure there was no fear of the water, and the individual learned to swim like a fish. They had a pool, and also, the child really liked to have movement, and so they had training in gymnastics and ice skating. So the child learned how to ice skate and acrobatics. And of course, rode a bicycle. Now, what was amazing, it was natural, that the child loved to read and studied the lesson every day. The three of them did it together for the period of time that they were reading it with the child. And they spent like a couple of hours a day on the lesson. That was the Bible lesson sermon that was published by the Christian Science Publishing Society. So by the age of about 8 or 10, the child was an avid swimmer, an avid ice skater, bicycle rider, acrobatics, played all the hymns up to two or three flats and sharps in the hymnal, which was probably 95% of them, and had a fantastic memory because they would go into a church and they did some traveling by this time. And they would go into a church and the daughter would get up and give an absolutely ad hoc testimony about a problem that had been overcome. And she repeated the scientific statement of being and substituted the words that were rather generic for the particular problem. In other words, there's no life, truth, intelligence. Instead of saying in matter, she would say in the belief of whatever the problem happened to be. And then throughout, she would replace her name or say I, you know, instead of man. Man is the image and likeness. She would say I am the image and likeness. And she did all this extemporaneously. Now, the thing that was obviously very natural but was unexpected was that her bone structure changed such that her appearance changed, such that there wouldn't be any doctor anywhere that, you know, knew what this face was supposed to look like, would recognize it as being anything other than totally natural. No one had a clue. Not a clue. And why should they? It had been overcome. Our thoughts are our experience. The beginning of Signs and Elf, Mary Baker Eddy says, or she quotes Shakespeare, nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. So if we change our thoughts, our experience is going to change accordingly. That includes our own appearance. I've seen a couple with a dog, and they all looked the same. Couldn't believe it. The appearance of the parents took on the appearance of the dog. I mean, I don't know whether anyone else has ever seen this or not, but I have. And I just said to myself, well, boy, I'll bet they've had that dog a long time. Yeah, the three of them looked very, very similar. Now, conversation. This young lady could carry on a conversation with anybody. The one practitioner, the second one, the one that said teach her how to read, gave a set of books. I think it was, I don't know how many there were, but it was a large set. And this was in addition to the classics. That was a different deal. But this set of books, and she didn't say how she came upon them, whether it was her own child or whoever, but they were like brand new. And so these books were used in the educational system. She never attended a public school. This was all individual tutoring, the whole educational process. But nobody could tell that there was anything different about her because her appearance, her bone structure had changed. Her appearance had changed. Great smile. She loved to play with animals. They had, a couple of dogs. They had a cat. They bought hamsters for her when she was in the early ages. She took total care of them. Oh, one other thing. The mother was really a good cook. And she was, they told me that she had prepared Eggs Benedict for breakfast one day. And she was really meticulous and had the English muffins hot coming out, and everything was just right. You know, you have to, as you know, if you cook at all, which I'm not, but, you know, I've observed others. And they've got all these variables going, my own mother. They got all these variables going. You know, different things take different kind of heat and take longer, shorter, and whatever. And to make everything come out right, it's really a job of engineering. So anyway, the daughter observed the mother doing these Eggs Benedict. And the next day she says, Mom, I'd like to make Eggs Benedict for everybody. So her mother said, okay, go ahead. She had never used a stove before. And she had never done any cooking. But she observed what the mother had done. And she did it. There were three of them, mother, father, and her. And so she made it for the three of them. And I was told it was perfect. Everything was timed correctly and everything was hot when it was served. And, she had the plates heated up to keep the food hot. Handled them with a dish towel to keep from getting her hands burned. Had fresh juice that she had, used in the, juiced it. Fresh oranges. Well, that's about it. All I can tell you is that it's extremely crucial that there be no outside influence that is contrary to the thought that everything is possible. And this was living proof that was the case. That's the end of this recording. And anyone that has questions, they're welcome to inquire. If you have a situation, and if you follow this procedure, you will be successful. Not everyone has the thought of things that are otherwise thought to be impossible can be solved. But this father did, and the mother went along with it, and it was accomplished. I know I was a very strong influence on it because the family was young and didn't have, you know, the experience. The father said he'd never been to any medical doctor at all. He was born in Christian Science, and that was the only thing he knew. The mother had not been. Her first exposure was when they got married. Well, probably exposed before that, but I mean, that was when they got married, that sealed it, because then she didn't do anything else. And by the way, she had a brother that was a preacher, you know, an evangelical preacher. So she broke away from all that. He was very popular. So that was a big deal for her not to follow in the footsteps of him. Okay, well, that's it. If you need conviction, all you've got to do is read about all the healings that were done by some of the very fine practitioners. Wentworth Winslow has 4 books about God. God is in the title. They're all very short titles. They're on a website. Just go to the authors and go to the W's, Winslow, and his 4 books are there. They're all totally indexed. And you can find any title very quickly. He raised one individual from the dead. He has about 3 or 4 articles on mental malpractice. Yeah, the books basically say God can do it, or no, let God do it. God can do it. God is doing it, and I think God did it, or something like that. In other words, it's the progress of thinking. The number one we have to let, just like Genesis 1, every one of the, Genesis 1, chapter 1, every one of the major verses, and there's 7 of them in there, you know, the 7 days of creation are outlined in Genesis 1. And in every single one, the first thing that is said is that we have to let. And God said, let. And then after it says that, then it says God did it. So we had to let it happen. Jesus didn't have many healings in Galilee because they thought of him as a boy. So he didn't stay there. You know, he did his healing ministry in other areas that did not know him. They had not attached him to boyhood or to being a carpenter. These people had to change their name. They actually had to change their name. In order to isolate the situation. But they saved a life. They saved a life. They gave the foundation to that child that was the difference between life and death. Okay, that's the end. Got to remember one thing. There's nothing but God. Everything is possible to God. Mr. Rawson said that's how he was able to overcome the belief of time in treating backwards or retroactive treating. He calls it both things. He had to get a oneness with God about there not being anything impossible, that everything was possible to God, and that there is no time, no limitation of time. And those two things enabled him to do wonderful, wonderful things that no one else had accomplished. There is nothing but God. Amen.